The death toll from the 7.9 magnitude earthquake that hit Nepal last week continues to rise, and millions of people are without shelter. A massive rebuilding effort for Kathmandu will have to get underway very quickly, but what could be done to prevent similar devastation during future quakes? Joining us now to talk about that is Ross Stein. He is an emeritus scientist at the U.S. Geological Survey and a consulting professor of geophysics at Stanford University. Ross, thank you for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
Ross, can you describe what happened geologically in Nepal that created this quake?
Well, India has been in a 40 million year long slow-mo collision into Tibet. And what's happened is that the people, and if you think of a car crashing in, the people in the front seat of the car have already found that the engine has been shoved into the passenger's compartment. But the people in the back seat of the car don't even know that an accident is in progress. So central and southern India is relatively unaffected, but northern India is the collision zone of this monstrous crash, and that's what pushes Tibet upwards, so it's the roof of the world.
And what are the conditions in Kathmandu and the surrounding areas that caused the dramatic destruction and the loss of life that we saw?
Well, first, any earthquake of this size, magnitude 7.8, proves very destructive to any structures that aren't very well built. And to make matters worse, the population of Nepal is pushing itself into Kathmandu. So it's one of these super cities of the world that is rapidly populating and long since ran out of wood. So construction is stone and masonry, and it's impoverished. And not only does that mean that the damage can be colossal, it's complicated even further or made worse because Kathmandu is basically a bowl of jello that shakes harder than anything else around it in an earthquake.
How so?
Well, the people live in flat places. All big cities are in flat places. And on Earth, to get a flat place, it means you have a pile of sediments. And so those sediments tend to shake very hard in an earthquake. It's as if I beat on a drum skin. Then I repeat this experiment, but I pour sand on the drum skin first. As you can imagine, the sand's going to go for quite more of a ride than the drum skin. And that's what happens in Kathmandu and cities like it.
Now, you described the way buildings are made in Kathmandu. Let's say the same kind of quake would happen in Los Angeles, for example. What kind of destruction might we see in that kind of city?
It's a good question because that size earthquake has already occurred in the greater Los Angeles area, but before it was populated in 1857. Exact same size of earthquake as this one. But the big difference, the profound difference, is the quality of the construction. We have building codes in the United States which are fairly strictly enforced, and those codes provide what's called minimal life safety. A building is simply not supposed to come down. It may not ever be used again, but it won't kill and entomb the people in it. And as a result, if this same earthquake were repeated in broader Los Angeles, the impact would be much, much less than it is here.
I watched a TED talk you gave where you talk about the fact that we like to build in cubes or stacks of cubes. And then you said, but cubes have no structural integrity. How so? We think of a cube as a fairly solid thing.
Isn't that funny? So we all should take a page from Buckminster Fuller, who showed us that really integrity comes from triangles. And geodesic domes, his wonderful creation of domes, are an example of a structure that's built purely with triangles and no cubes. And if we all lived in domes, earthquakes would be fun. There'd be no damage at all because they're light, they're strong, and they don't collapse. And in contrast, the problem with a cube is it can twist itself into being absolutely flat. So a cube is only held up by the internal triangles. And to strengthen buildings, we simply add internal triangles.
But I guess the problem with domes is that you can't stack them on top of each other. And in a lot of these big cities, everybody's living literally on top of each other.
You're right. It's so sad that domes aren't stackable, because what happens in the developing world, in Nepal and so many other places, is a building is built maybe a few stories high. To recoup the investment, maybe the bottom story is retail space with big glass windows, so it's got no triangles. And as the family grows, another story and then another is built on top of it that it was never intended to take. So the combination of these unengineered additions to the weight and height of the building, plus the vulnerability of its soft first story, these buildings are weak at the knees. And what happens in city after city in great earthquakes is the bottom story collapses and the rest of the building drops on top of it. And each successive floor, as it falls, collapses further.
And the fatalities in earthquakes have risen dramatically in recent decades, right?
They have, and that's probably not because we're building more poorly. It's because the population is flowing into megacities, and many of those are astride the great plate boundaries. And as a result, we're creating the targets of chance. If you happen to have an earthquake near Kathmandu or Port-au-Prince, Haiti, or we can think of many other places where we hope it won't happen, Tehran, for example, or Manila in the Philippines, or Caracas, Venezuela, or Quito, Ecuador, then we create the conditions for a truly colossal disaster, which never could have existed before because we didn't put 10 million, 20 million people into one city living cheek by jowl in poorly engineered structures.
Ross, thank you so much for talking with us.
I'm happy to do so.
Ross Stein is a consulting professor of geophysics at Stanford University, and that TED Talk I mentioned is really worth watching. We've linked to it on our website, whyy.org/thepulse.